Good morning and welcome to Good to Grow. I'm Norma Martinez.
I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And I'm Bill Hooten.
Bill, welcome back to
the show. Thank you. Been a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but during one of those weeks that you were out, you actually went to an event that we had been promoting here on the show, which was at Pomegranate Workshop that they held
at Escarate Park
at the community garden there. And you, Bill, I understand, are a convert.
Well, I have become a convert. I was so impressed. Dr. Iglesias did the little seminar, and he showed how easy pomegranate bushes do, how well they do here, how easy they are to grow. I mean, they are disease resistant, and they like bad soil and bad water. So I understand there's 30,000 acres of pomegranates in California, so they do grow them commercially there, but one of the few places. But they're trying to promote pomegranates locally, commercially. And so I hope that takes off. I hope that does well.
Well, it would be a much more, I think, important crop here, not to downgrade, of course, the pecan crop that has been so central to the economy in Southwest Texas or in West Texas and in southern New Mexico. But pomegranates, like you said, they don't really care what kind of water. You can maybe be a little neglectful as far as watering goes, too, and they can adapt to pretty much any kind of soil.
Well, right. they do like our alkaline soil, and they do like they don't mind, I should say, the high salt content in the water. So you could have a marginal well and still grow pomegranates pretty well. But I think we're advocating them for areas that where the soil is not the best, where high salt content in the water would be makes them economic to grow.
Right, and you definitely need supplemental irrigation to grow these plants on a large scale, and they are really promoted as you want to keep your pristine land for larger pecan orchards.
Right.
But they can definitely withstand a lot of, not just our climate. I mean, they can really, really withstand the poor growing conditions that we do have in El Paso. So I'm really glad that you're excited about pomegranates.
Well, I am. And one of the drawbacks, I was hoping it would be less water. But they do take a little less water than a pecan tree, but not substantially less. They still need supplemental irrigation, although they did an experiment. I remember Dr. Iglesias said that they can survive on our 8 inches a year. So even without supplement, they can live. So just a little bit more, maybe they can become economically feasible.
So what are you going to do with your newfound knowledge?
Well, I need to find somebody that has 2 acres of land. That's willing to give them to me. And we need to put in a drill a well and put some drip irrigation there and plant away 600 trees to the acre.
So the call is out there. You've got
That's
two
right.
acres of land.
That's
willing
right.
to give up
That's
to
right.
Bill Hooten.
Yeah.
Don't forget to get somebody to help you harvest those pomegranate plants
right.
also.
Well, one of the things I found interesting is that they do start to produce even in the third and fourth year. It's probably not economic until the fourth or fifth year, but you do get quite a production even in the second and third and fourth year. So that's you see the production more quickly than you do. I think pecans are a little bit longer than that, and some of the other long-term crops are longer production periods. But this makes it interesting.
Right. Well, Bill, you were involved in the Rose Garden there at Memorial Park, but it's now closed to the public, I'm afraid.
That is correct. It's a shame because there were a lot of blooms. There are a lot of blooms, but the city just finds it that it's better to close it during November, December.
It opens March 1, and master gardeners are out there in the dead of winter, deadheading and pruning back the rose bushes so that we can have them year in and year out. So we definitely need to close the garden so we can be able to do some of those maintenance. It's essential to get these long, beautiful, lasting blooms out
there in the park. I would suggest everybody that's got roses in their garden, continue to water your roses through the winter around here because of our moderate temperatures. They don't completely go dormant, so continue to water at least every couple of weeks, maybe once a month on your rose bushes through the winter.
What about if there's like a big freeze that's coming down? Is there any sort of precaution that a person needs to take? Because I would assume that roses, since they're normally not, I would say, native to this particular region, they're probably more used to being in colder weather when it comes to winter.
Right, exactly. And I think that we shouldn't be too concerned about any of the tops dying back, the shoots on and all that. The most important thing would be to keep those roots protected. And the best way to keep roots protected is by applying mulch. Yeah, don't worry about a hard freeze on the roses. It's not going to kill them, but we want to make sure that we keep the roots alive because that's really what's going to send back all that stored energy out into making new shoots for the following year.
Well, I remember after we had that February freeze, when the roses came back the following spring, that it was pretty spectacular.
Well, it was major, and they actually liked that, that they went totally dormant probably during that period of time, and so they came back in a real rush, and they were beautiful that following spring.
Well, I had a question regarding roses from one of our listeners who asked me to ask you guys, so I'm going to go ahead and do that, is he had heard that if you have a rose bush that dies and you take it out and you replant another rose bush in that same spot, that it won't succeed because the soil there has now been rendered toxic. So how much truth is there to that? I had never heard that before.
Okay. Well, the most biggest important question that we need to ask is, why did that first rose bush die? If it died because it was a lack of water, if it was a bad place it was at, it was neglected, then the soil has nothing to do with that. It was all about the maintenance and the care of that. However, it always is a risk to plant the same families of plant in the same area, and that's due to diseases that may develop in that area. However, it's important to really look at the state of the plant before it dies if you really need to diagnose it with a particular pathogen. But the soil would not become toxic. We just need to remediate the problem, and I really identify what went wrong in the first place to be able to help the subsequent plant grow and thrive, if you will. Yeah. There's no toxic elements that are excreted from any kind of bushes.
Well, and I'd like to add that I think our rose garden is proof of that. If that were true,
you'd have to be picking up and moving every year.
You'd have to move the rose garden. So I don't think that's a principle that applies, generally speaking. I think maybe that theory gets put out there because it says don't plant in a vegetable garden. Don't plant the same family
correct
over and over again because it is depleted. Mm-hmm. But toxic is not the word
right. That
would be appropriate, maybe. And I do try to rotate, and I know at the vegetable garden we try to rotate our crops just from a depletion perspective.
Right. It's actually a cultural practice that you do when you're talking about any kind of annuals to be able to not just deplete the soil of certain nutrients, but also just you don't want to build up a population of pests or pathogens that can really become detrimental to.
What do cotton farmers do if they grow cotton every year? What do they just do? They rotate? Do they try other crops?
They don't necessarily rotate. Usually land that's in production stays in production for a particular crop unless they're looking into phasing out into a different, maybe they're trying to go organic, they would probably plant another plant as opposed to cotton.
But yeah, I see cotton sort of rotated with alfalfa sometimes out in the valley.
Right, exactly. And because also alfalfa fixes nitrogen from the air too, so it doesn't need as much fertilizer. So that's one of the reasons why alfalfa is a good rotation crop. And speaking of cotton, I've seen cotton being harvested already in the valley.
Right.
It's fall. Fall is here. That's what my indicator is when I see those large bales of cotton out in the valley.
Well, yeah, speaking of rotating crops, I remember hearing something about the Three Sisters, which goes back, I guess, to when the Native Americans planted their crops. And I think one was corn and one was – I can't remember what the other two were. But I guess in rotating those crops sequentially, they actually enriched the soil in doing so.
Right, exactly. I think the Three Sisters are corn because that's the tallest one. The second sister is the beans. And then the third is squash.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say zucchini, but yeah, it's close.
Yeah, so the beans work their way up around the corn. And that's the support system as well. And then the squash stays around in the – as a lower growing plant. So those are the Three Sisters.
Very interesting. I'd never heard that before.
Well, since the temperatures now are getting cooler and the days are getting shorter, the nights are getting longer, we're starting to see our trees sort of start to enter dormancy, and fall color hasn't quite yet made its way into the region. But I'm thinking that maybe when people are buying trees, because now is a great time to plant, fall color is probably something that they might want to consider. And I remember when I had my first house, that was one of the things that We considered when we bought the house and decided to put some trees in, we bought Chinese pistache. We had an oak. We don't have an oak anymore. That was in the old house. But there are some really, you know, great trees out there that provide good fall color, which you wouldn't normally think of here in El Paso.
Well, I think the Chinese pistache is a great example. They're beautiful red leaves, and you can actually see that color right now. Even if you're buying a tree, you can see the trees, the leaves have begun to turn already, so you can see that vibrant color that you will get every fall in that particular tree.
And I see around Album Park, they have a lot of the Chinese pistaches there, and they are just it's a really great red color. I see a lot of variation in the colors around town. Some of them aren't quite as deep red. Maybe others a little bit more orangey yellow. But they have sort of a variation, I guess, of their colors. I also have a western soapberry tree, and those don't go red. They go a really beautiful yellow in the fall as well.
Right, exactly. And also ash trees.
Yeah.
There's a lot of diversity.
They've begun
of the
to turn.
Begin
right.
to turn.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, I know a western soapberry is Oscar Mestis is one of his favorite trees for the area because it grows pretty rapidly, and it does have a nice fall color to it.
And they will reseed everywhere if you got the right tree. Mine,
right.
I got little baby trees coming out all over the yard.
is that a real negative, or do you just have to
just
cut them off?
Just keep an eye out and just pluck them out when you're done. So it's not really that big of a deal. Though sometimes if you're mowing the lawn, those little berries do tend to become projectiles.
That's true. Yeah. Right.
I've seen some crepe myrtles that actually have a really nice reddish color when it starts to turn.
There are a number of varieties of crepe myrtle, and they do. I think they do change colors differently. I don't have enough to compare, but I think they are. Some of them are much more dramatic than others. Because there's so many ash, that's what we see so much of.
Right.
It's an aspect of fall that we don't really appreciate in El Paso too much because we don't have that much variety. There are some maples around, but that's a really pretty one, and you really have to almost travel. To see the benefits, to see the beauty, and up in our New Mexico mountains, it's perfect right now.
Oh, and pyracantha have those beautiful red berries
that
start coming out in the fall, and that stuff that would be really great ornamental stuff to bring inside, just like those leaves that are turning.
Exactly. Are you all familiar with heavenly bamboo, Nandina?
Yes.
Also, is a very a different growing than a plant than pyracantha. Pyracantha can be. You know, a big bush, or you can have it trail against a wall. But the Nandina really grow really slender and upright. So they're a nice little addition for a small planting strip that you have that doesn't need a lot of care, but it does have that showy foliage and those berries as well. So
that's true.
That's another option.
I've seen some recently, and they are beginning to change color.
Right.
So a lot of great ornamental options out there. Maybe you're an artsy, craftsy kind of person, and of course there's pine cones being dropped all over the place, so you can pick those up and do what you will with them. Go buy yourself some baling wire and some cool stuff at the arts and crafts store and get working. Well, we're out of time for today's show, but we want to remind you that you can listen to some of our past shows at ktep.org. If you go to the Good to Grow page, some helpful tips are also there for you if you're interested in gardening here in the desert. And you can also send an email to the Master Gardeners if you have any questions for them about your plants or your yard. Just go again to ktep.org, to the Good to Grow page, and if you're not online, you can always call the Master Gardener hotline at 566-1276, 566-1276 with all your gardening questions. Well, thanks so much for listening today. I'm Norma Martinez.
I'm Denise Rodriguez.
And Bill Hooten.
And remember, a gardener shadow is the best way to keep your garden good to grow.